Well, good evening, Doctor Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station we're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, and, well, this evening we're going to have one of my favorite guests, Dr. Jerome Corsi. We're going to be talking about what's going on in this country. We can also briefly mention that Dr. Corsi has written a book on, I believe it was Atomic Iran, going into what's happening in the Middle East. But our attention is focused primarily in the Middle East at the present time, and of course what's happening in Iraq as we surge our number of troops there. I don't know why they don't just say increase our number of troops, but we're going to surge them. We're not going to increase them. But as we, of course, increase our troops there in Iraq, and we see the situation seemingly really not improving very much. And then, of course, there's the threat of conflict with Iran. And will we be able to work out some sort of an agreement with Iran, or will we go to war with Iran? Our attention is focused elsewhere as we are losing our freedom here at home. And Dr. Corsi has done some wonderful work going into the background of this effort to build a North American community. And that is really the program. The elite have been planning for many years to have a North American Union. We have a video, which is David Rockefeller talking for the better part of an hour on a video before a group of the elitists. And this is many, many years ago about the Union, American Union 2005. Well, unfortunately, they got the wrong date, but that hasn't detracted them at all. They really are intent about doing away with the sovereignty of our nation and merging us into this North American community. So with that as a background, Dr. Jerome Corsi, thank you so very much for staying up late to be with us.
Dr. Stan, it's always an honor to be with you. Thank you.
Well, tell us what is new and exciting. I know you're constantly writing about this, and you've really been able to create quite a storm, a firestorm. I understand Michael Medved has been ranting on his radio program about these extremists who think that there's an effort to create a North American Union and how terrible that is. Why don't you pick us up and bring us up to date with what's going on?
Well, I think, Dr. Stan, that's exactly the most recent, is that for some reason, Michael Medved and John Hawkins, another conservative blogger, have decided to attack those of us, and particularly me, in terms of the whole idea of a North American Union being a conspiracy. They want to dismiss it. They want to say that, you know, it's just kooky. Michael Medved, in his radio show and the articles he wrote, and I've never seen so many, you know, terms of invective strung together. He was just like losing his mind. He was having a nervous breakdown. And, from the time I've been a kid, I've come to realize that when somebody sputters at the mouth and calls you all these names, it's because they've really lost the argument. They don't have a way to answer what you're saying, and so they just kind of lose their mind. And I answered Michael Medved that way as calmly as I could and pointed out the evidence.
Well, and you even interviewed him, didn't you?
Yes, I interviewed Robert Pastor. I'd love to tell you that story. We'll do that when we come back.
All right, fine. Well, I think it's so vitally important that you have to understand that the last thing that they want is for the American people to know that there really are people who are working behind the scenes to destroy the sovereignty of our nation, which means, of course, the end of the constitutional protections we have of individual freedom. So while our attention is focused on what's happening in the Middle East, and our boys go over there to fight for democracy, we're losing our freedom here at home. We'll be back in just a moment with Dr. Jerome Corsi. Well, you pick up the story there.
Well, Dr. Pastor was actually quite cordial to me. Dr. Pastor is the American University professor who has for over a decade been writing about the creating of a North American community. He's been strong on the North American integration theme. And while he's an academic, he also has gone in and out of politics during the Carter administration. Robert Pastor was on the Linowitz Committee, which was very heavily involved in setting the stage for giving the Panama Canal to Panama. And then Pastor moved within the White House. He worked with the National Security Council under Carter and was the point person for negotiating the treaty and to give the Panama Canal to Panama. Jesse Helms was so angry at Robert Pastor for doing that that when Bill Clinton nominated Pastor to be our ambassador to Panama, Jesse Helms refused for the issue to be discussed on the floor of the Senate. So I called up Robert Pastor because I saw Dr. Stan, he'd given this interview in Spanish, and I guess he thought, you know, few of us would see it or read Spanish, but he said there very blatantly that it would take another 9/11 crisis. The next 9/11 crisis we had might be just the ticket for furthering the path of North American integration. Now, when I read that, my jaw just about dropped because, you know, that whole idea of using a crisis to further an objective like North American integration or, you know, the Patriot Act or all kinds of things people argue crises can be used for, here Dr. Pastor was openly proclaiming that's what he wanted to do. So I called him, and he very carefully said, no, he does not want to create a North American union right now. I said, well, you know, Dr. Pastor, that's the critical issue, that right now. I said, are you saying that a North American union is an inherently bad idea? He said, no, it's a good idea. It's just that our three nations need to go through some more integration before we're ready for it. We need to think more like North Americans. We need to put a series of preliminary institutions in place, like this North American Investment Fund that Pastor's been calling for to, you know, put more billions in the thought that we could develop Mexico. He just won't give up on the idea that Mexico's a drug-controlled, cartel-dominated, corrupt country that will never be developed just by money. But at any rate, I asked Pastor then, if a crisis, if he did say that, and he said a crisis, new 9/11 would be just what we needed. And his frustration is that Mexico with Calderon is opposed from the left, that George Bush is now a lame duck president preoccupied by Iraq, and in Canada there's a minority government, so there's not the kind of governments in place Pastor wants to advance this agenda.
Hold that. Anyway, Dr. Corsi is just saying that he had an opportunity to talk to Robert Pastor. Now, Robert Pastor is one of the architects of this whole idea of a North American community. And certainly Robert Pastor had basically said that, you know, when Dr. Corsi interviewed him, Robert Pastor said, well, he didn't want to feel we were ready to form a North American community right now. And, of course, Jerome Corsi had said, well, but that's that right now part, you know. We're not ready to form it right now. But what, and then actually he had said in something he had written in Spanish for a Spanish audience that all we needed was another 9/11 incident and then we'd be able to, how did he put it? Did he say to join the countries or what?
He said that would further the North American integration agenda. Just what we needed to get into the North American community. In other words, as a result of a new crisis, whether it would be a 9/11 attack or economic crisis, we'd have to then go to further union with Canada and Mexico in order to have more security or have more prosperity. That's his whole idea, that we want to defend the perimeter around North America and basically have the borders between the United States and Mexico and between the United States and Canada be like in Europe, where, you know, the border's there, but if you have a European Union passport, you can just go across them and live or work wherever you want. And that's the whole agenda of the Security and Prosperity Partnership. In 2007, SPP.gov declares that in 2005 and 2006 report to the leaders that we're going to get Trusted Traveler and Trusted Trader biometric cards. Well, that'll mean that any Mexican that wants to go into an SPP.gov office in Mexico can apply for and get a trusted traveler biometrics card, they won't have to come across the desert anymore. They'll just go to a border crossing place and swipe that card through a border crossing electronic reader, like you swipe a credit card through the grocery store credit card machine to take the groceries out of the grocery store. And everybody will be a North American traveler. Another 30 million Mexicans want to come here. They won't have to be illegal at all. That's the plan of SPP.gov, and that's what Robert Pastor means when he says greater North American integration. And you know, to understand, the whole conversation with Robert Pastor was important because it reaffirms that the plan of the globalists who want to create a North American Union is to do it the same way it was done in Europe. We now have the documents like Jean Monnet, one of the key architects of the European Union. We have his memoirs, and Monnet now openly said in the memoirs, you know, I lied. I knew I had to have a stealth plan. Because if I said in 1950 I wanted Germany and France and Italy to forego their sovereignty, they would have said, no way. But, you know, by taking a series of steps like Robert Pastor is now suggesting in North America, first a steel and coal agreement, and then in 1957 and 58 a Treaty of Rome and a common market, a European common market, then a European community declared, in 1999 a Treaty of Maastricht, actually a European Union that's a regional government, and once you've got the regional government in place, why not have a regional currency, the euro, and that took until 2002 to really get in place. So it's the same plan here. The step-by-step, get one piece in place, it makes the next one look reasonable, and over time, we give up our sovereignty slowly, incrementally, piece by piece, in a way that we never would have given our sovereignty up had it been proposed directly.
And I think it's important for our listeners to understand that there really is a master plan. There are people who do not believe in sovereign nations. They believe in a world government, but you can't create a world government all at one time. And so the plan that they have laid out, and they've described this repeatedly, and Dr. Cuddy has certainly given me the quotations where time and again they've said how they're going to do it. They're going to create regional blocks. And, of course, with free trade. And when you have free trade, you give up your national sovereignty, your ability to have trade restrictions, tariffs, things of that sort. And then once you have these regional blocks, and whether it be North America or South America or Europe or Asia or Africa or the Arab countries, the Middle East, then, of course, you can go ahead and merge them all together. And so this is what they're doing throughout the world. But America really is so vitally important. You've got to get America to give up its sovereignty and to join this North American community or North American Union. But you can't tell the American people because, well, they're not smart enough to understand really this brilliant idea of the elite that we need a world government, and they would object to giving up their sovereignty and their freedom. So you have to lie to them. And there are people out there who see nothing wrong with lying. And they will lie, and they will lie, and they will lie. And then they will, you know, when you point out what they're doing, why they'll come apart like Michael Medved did, and began this, he was literally almost yelling on his radio program, condemning people like you and me and others. We're trying to point out what's going on, accusing us of being it's a conspiracy. It's not a conspiracy. It's right out in the open. They've written about it. They've even published a book called The Building a North American Community, Council on Foreign Relations. Certainly Robert Pastor belongs to the CFR. They published that book back in May of 2005. So what does he say when you point out these things?
Well, you know, the people like Michael Medved don't have an answer. And I've written articles both on WorldNet Daily and Human Events Online directly giving a list of arguments. My first point is the one you just made, Dr. Stan. I say it's not a conspiracy because it's all out there on government websites. And now I published an article in WorldNet Daily. I've got the printed books from SPP, the Security and Prosperity Partnership. They've printed up, you know, glossy, full-color, three-language, you know, Mexican. They can read it in Spanish, we can read it in English, and the French Canadians can read it in French, with all of the working groups, these 20 or so working groups described by area with all their milestones and memorandum of understanding and new agreements laid out, what they're doing, how they're pulling together a North American energy policy to replace a U.S. energy policy. These are books published by the three governments. And when you see the photographs that I put in WorldNet Daily of these published books by the three governments, I mean, that's hard to say it's a conspiracy. They're publishing it in the open. They just don't expect that anybody's going to read it, and they expect that they'll be able to say, oh, this is just normal. It's just a dialogue between three neighbors. Well, Dr. Stan, there is no, we now have also the organizational chart. I got it at the Freedom of Information Act request from SPP.gov, and these working groups on this organizational chart are laid out in blocks, just like any organizational structure. They report up to three cabinet secretaries. The boxes connect in lines up to Secretary Rice, Secretary of State, Michael Chertoff, Homeland Security, and Gutierrez, Secretary Gutierrez of Commerce. And then those boxes at the cabinet level connect up to report to the Homeland Security Council and the National Security Council. Then they report up to the President of the United States. Now that's a lot more than a dialogue. That's a formal organizational chart, and what the boxes of the working groups are. Again, we have the, we publish this on stopspp.com. You can see these documents. They're free. Just go there and look at them. We have the list of the bureaucrats from the three countries that are assigned to the working groups, the various departments they come from, their emails, their phone numbers. There are hundreds of bureaucrats in our government participating in this effort, and they're rewriting U.S. laws and regulations to be North American laws and regulations that supersede and replace the administrative structure we currently have in place. It's the infrastructure, Dr. Stan, that prepares us to go into a North American union. It's all being laid out in detail right now, and those books publish it.
And how would one go about getting that book you're speaking of?
I gave the name in the article on WorldNet Daily of Jerry Word, W-O-R-D. You can call up the Department of Commerce. She's in the NAFTA office of the Department of Commerce. It's G-E-R-I-W-O-R-D. And at WorldNet Daily, where I published these books, an article about 10 days ago, I gave her phone number and I gave her email address. I can look it up right here while we're talking, Dr. Stan. I can come back and give it to you in a minute.
All right, fine. Well, I think it's really so important that people understand that the whole rationality, one of the rationales they use is, look, we've got a 2,000-mile border with Mexico, and that's so hard to defend against terrorism. You know, we've got to stop terrorism. Wouldn't it be a lot easier if we had a much shorter border to guard, like the southern border of Mexico? Hey, that's a lot shorter, and there we can stop the terrorists from coming into our country. And then, of course, they could not get into Mexico, and then we could open up our border with Mexico. Isn't that nice? And I mean, it almost sounds rational, but when you stop and think about it, well, what about the sovereignty of our country, though? That would mean that anybody from Mexico could come into the United States at will, and that's exactly what they want. They don't want immigrants. They want migrants. They want people to be able to migrate from one part of the North American community to another part of the North American community, and that is their phrase. The book put out by the Council on Foreign Relations, whose sole purpose from its very inception in 1921 was to create a world government. The booklet put out by the Council on Foreign Relations is entitled Building a North American Community. Once you understand that, why this makes sense, I mean, why would we want to give up our sovereignty? Because this has to do with a greater good. And why would we want to raise the living standard of the average American to that of the Mexican peasant? Because why should we have so much here when there are people, poor people in Mexico? And so wouldn't it be better if we had equitable distribution of wealth within nations and between nations? That is, of course, the goal of the plan. It's called the Earth Summit Plan. You can actually read it in our Sustainable Development syllabus. The Earth Charter will be right back. Well, Dr. Corsi, pick up the story there.
Well, as I said, I wrote the article on the SPP, the Security and Prosperity Partnership, books that are being published. It's on WorldNet Daily. It's on January 15th. I just published it this past Monday, called U.S., Mexico, Canada, Harmonizing Policies. And the subtitle is The North American Deep Cooperation on Many Fronts Already Underway Reveal New Official Publication. And you can see a picture of the three books. The books are they're 2005-2006 Report to the Leaders, plus a little picture book they put together showing three leaders together at Waco, Texas. And if you want copies, if your listeners want copies of these books, all they have to do is contact Jerry Word in the Department of Commerce, G-E-R-I-W-O-R-D. And her phone number right on that, I give on that article on January 15th, WorldNet Daily, is 202-482-1545. 202-482-1545. Jerry Word, G-E-R-I-W-O-R-D. She's in the Office of NAFTA and Inter-American Affairs. She's the coordinator of the SPP.gov website. And that's .gov because it's a Department of Commerce website. And Jerry Word should send you the books if you request them. They're public documents.
All right, fine. Well, I certainly want to get hold of them because I certainly am not going to try to become a specialist in this field as you are, but I would like to be able to point to these things. And as you say, this is not a conspiracy.
That's right. Once you can show those books to someone, you know, Michael Medved, you say, Michael, look, this is concrete evidence. Are you just going to say, you know, these books are a conspiracy, that they don't exist? They're real. The websites. How about KeepTexasMoving.com, which is a Department of Texas website for the Department of Transportation in Texas, and they're going to start building this 4-football-fields-wide highway this year in 2007. They're going to use the Kelo Supreme Court decision. They're going to start confiscating homes and ranches, and they're going to build the first section of this 4-football-field-wide highway. Now, is it going to be a conspiracy theory, Dr. Stan, when Cintra, the investment consortium in Spain, puts down the money and they start taking homes and tearing up land to build this highway? I think that's reality. And the plan, which is on the Kansas City Smart Port, openly discussed, there's a whole brochure of two worlds, one route. Two worlds are the China and the Far East and the United States, and they've declared that Kansas City is an inland port. Well, I don't see any water anywhere around Kansas City, but the port is in Lázaro Cárdenas and Manzanilla down on the Pacific in Mexico. So the two worlds, all these container ships from China can unload at Lázaro Cárdenas with non-U.S. Union workers, Mexican stevedores, put those goods on Mexican trucks and Mexican trains, and up they come through Interstate 35 at Laredo, soon to be the Trans-Texas Corridor, all the way up to Kansas City, where they'll have a Mexican customs office right in Kansas City. And SPP.gov has arranged for all these trucks and trains just to have electronics. They'll come in fast lanes, F-A-S-T, special lanes where they'll just have the electronic chips read. And that's great because, you know, Mexican drug cartels have been buying Mexican trucking companies for decades to launder cash. Nobody's going to look in these trucks. It could be half-filled of marijuana. Nobody's going to look in them.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment with Dr. Corsi. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Dr. Corsi has simply told us how to contact Jerry Word, W-R-O-R-D, who is the coordinator for the website there. And the telephone number, if you'd like to get the books, is 202-482-1545. That's 202-482-1545. There are three books going into the whole background of this plan for the Security and Prosperity Partnership. And then, of course, he's talking about the Trans-NAFTA Highway and how, of course, they're starting to build that. Will that be this year when they start building it, Jerry?
Yes, Dr. Stan, they're going to start in Texas right this year. And, you know, I've written a couple of other important articles in the last few, actually, days, weeks. I've put an article on WorldNet Daily that makes it clear that what they're calling, you know, like this Trans-Texas Corridor is what they call a PPP, PPP is a public-private partnership. And I documented this conference company, the Euro Money Seminars, that is holding conferences basically to teach our state and local officials how to sell public infrastructure, roads and other public infrastructure, to international investment consortiums like the Cintra in Spain, which is financing the Trans-Texas Corridor, and then the consortiums lease those highways for 50 or 99 years, make a one-time payment to the state, and, you know, basically, it's a plan that the Bush administration is sponsoring that goes right along with the whole goal here of, you know, to take the public structure of the United States, which belongs to the people, sovereign, and to change it into a corporate structure that is owned by international corporations. When you ride the Trans-Texas Corridor, once it's built and you go from San Antonio to Dallas, you'll be paying Spain a toll to do it, if you can believe it. But that's what it's going to amount to. And it's the same as our manufacturing all going to China, because the purpose of these corridors, which they're going to have across the country, north to south, is that all the container ships bringing the manufactured cheap slave goods or near slave goods from China will be able to enter up through Mexico, through the southern water routes. Panama's canal is deepened. They're going to build a new Panama Canal. These container ships will go right through that and end up going up to Florida. I suspect they'll probably end up making New Orleans a deep water port. And bring these containers right up through the heartland of America, north to south. Because if you can get actual slave labor, and China still has slave labor, they've got concentration camps of political prisoners that produce goods for the U.S. market, or their labor pool earns 20 or 30 cents an hour, well, all of our manufacturing is going to go to China. Even under the NAFTA structure, Mexico is going to lose. Mexico is getting flooded with Chinese goods and is losing manufacturing to China, too. All the motor companies, another series of major automobile makers in Detroit, at the end of 2006, announced another round of plant closings. And you've got companies now like Chrysler making deals to manufacture cars in China and to ship them into the United States on these kind of container ships to bring them up to these corridors. And they'll actually manufacture even the automobiles for the U.S. market in China. We're going to lose virtually all manufacturing of significance in the United States within one generation, Dr. Stan. It'll destroy the middle class.
And that's exactly what it's intended to be. They want the equitable distribution of wealth between nations. So that's covered in the Earth Charter, point 10A. And most Americans have never been told about the Earth Charter. You'll be interested to know that General Motors is going to be investing $8.5 billion next year internationally. What that really means is they're closing their plants down here in this country, and they're going to start spending $8.5 billion this coming year and the following year building automotive plants in other countries, predominantly in China, and they'll be manufacturing our cars in China, and they'll be manufacturing our refrigerators and our washing machines. Everything is going to be manufactured in other countries. And America then will no longer be a manufacturing country. Our wealth will come from, well, we're not sure where our wealth is going to come from. But after all, aren't we the wealthiest nation in the world? I mean, aren't we buying more than anybody else? Yes, we're purchasing more than any other country in the world. But we're doing it with borrowed money. And actually, of course, every year our trade deficit increases. Our government has to borrow about $3.5 billion every single day, simply to pay our bills. America, which was once the most powerful nation financially and militarily, is now the most powerful nation militarily, but it's all done on borrowed money. And remember that old adage, he who pays the piper calls the tune. And who's going to be calling the tune here 5, 6, 8 years from now? Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is Dr. Jerome Corser. We're talking about the plan for the deindustrialization of America. We're talking about what is happening with the Security and Prosperity Partnership. We're talking about the Trans-NAFTA Highway. And the average American really doesn't understand what is happening because he finds it difficult to believe that the America we grew up in, the America we love, the America we fought for in the past and tried to preserve, is simply rapidly fading away because there are people who have a different agenda, who have a different worldview. And I would think that there would be absolutely no opposition to what is taking place. In fact, most people would never have heard of the NAFTA highway. They would never have heard of the Security and Prosperity Partnership had it not been for the Internet and alternative radio and for Dr. Jerome Corser, who's done a yeoman's job of bringing this out on the Internet. The Internet really is a wonderful way to reach people. Joe Farah, who publishes WorldNet Daily, has almost 5 million hits a day. Almost 5 million people a day go to his website to pull down articles, and of course, most of them have read Dr. Jerome Corser, and that's why people who work for, who have a different world agenda, like Michael Medved, become so frantic and so angry because the American people are beginning to understand what's going on, and there's a growing awareness. And Jerome, don't you think that an awful lot of Americans do understand, and that's why Mr. Medved and people like that are so furious and really are trying to really just shout you down and shout down anybody who talks about the treasonous acts that are taking place?
Oh, absolutely. Dr. Stan, that Michael Medved is having a nervous breakdown over this indicates that we're making great progress in communicating to the American people. And it's the Internet, it's radio shows like yours, it's the great tapes that you circulate and get passed around of your radio shows. And the articles I'm writing are fully documented. So I've got links in the articles, footnotes in my books that are thoroughly footnoted. You can go see the original documents yourself. I mean, I also wrote an article this week. It was on January 18th. WorldNet Daily, and I've been writing in both WorldNet Daily and Human Events online, humanevents.com. This article I wrote on January 18th, I've documented that the Virginia Department of Transportation has now leased the Pocahontas Parkway to an Australian investment consortium. It's an 8.8-mile tollway that connects down into the Richmond International Airport. They're going to extend it.
Hold that thought for just a moment. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Dr. Corser has just been telling us about a new tollway in Virginia. But before we develop that idea, Dr. Corser, you do have a website or the websites where people can go to get additional information besides, of course, WorldNet Daily and Human Events.
Those are the two. If you just go to WorldNet Daily and Human Events and search my name, which is Corsi, C-O-R-S-I. You'll see the articles that I've written. And then, of course, the books I've written. I wrote a book with Jim Gilchrist, the founder of the Minutemen, called Minutemen, The Battle to Secure America's Borders. And you can find that book, Minutemen, on Amazon.com. Again, just search my name, Jerome, with a J, J-E-R-O-M-E, Corsi, C-O-R-S-I. And if you look at those websites, WorldNet Daily and Human Events, you'll see the past stories. I'm writing on those constantly. And in the spring, I'm just finishing here in this month, January, a new book on the North American Union, and it should be out in the bookstores in the spring of 2007.
Yeah, fine. In fact, we do carry your book, Minuteman. We think it's an important book because, of course, this really deals with the not even as much with the Minutemen as the immigration problem, and the Minutemen were formed to try to counter the immigration problem. But, of course, you can't understand why our government, why President Bush steadfastly refuses to enforce the immigration laws of our nation, steadfastly refuses to allow the INS to already go out and stop the employers who are hiring people here illegally, why President Bush has encouraged the agreement, the Social Security agreement, so that our already badly underfunded Social Security will now begin funding people who come to this country from Mexico illegally, and have worked here, usually many times under false Social Security numbers, but don't you worry, they're going to be able to get Social Security payments from our Social Security fund, because we're the most generous people in the world. And you have to say, that's madness. Why would people who have violated our laws and come in and either worked with a fraudulent Social Security card or with a made-up number, why would they get Social Security? And it's because this is all about uniting the United States and Mexico and sharing our wealth with the people of Mexico. Now, I feel very sorry for the people in Mexico. I wish they had a better country, but we will not help Mexico and give a better life to those people by destroying this country, and that's exactly what our leaders are intent upon, is the destruction of the sovereignty of our nation and merging Mexico, the United States, and Canada into a North American community, or as the Council on Foreign Relations book says, and the book is published, and you can pull it down off the CFR website or purchase that. It's called Building a North American Community. It was published just two months after the March 20, 2005 meeting, where George Bush, Vicente Fox, and Paul Martin of Canada joined together. Paul Martin at that time was the Premier of Canada, and they agreed to this whole idea, but basically it was all decided ahead of time. The meeting was simply something to give legitimacy to the plan, I believe, put together by others working behind the scenes to eliminate the sovereignty of the nations, and step by step, little by little, subterfuge by subterfuge, to destroy the sovereignty of what was once the United States of America. Well, you know, Jerome, certainly as we see this thing unfolding, and you keep writing your articles and, of course, bringing more and more out about this, you know, certainly the other side must, besides Michael Medved, what about the people at the Council on Foreign Relations? Have you talked to anybody there besides Mr. Pastor, who's a member, about their plans to destroy our sovereignty?
Only with Robert Pastor. And I think that Michael Medved has really kind of been a point person to come out and attack us. You know, being like an attack dog and see if he could ridicule this whole idea so we'd stop talking about it. But Michael Medved's ridicule doesn't bother me. He just makes himself look foolish by the invectives and the bad words he invents that he wants to spew out at us. You know, that was an old communist tactic that, you know, radical organizer Saul Alinsky in the 50s, as rules for radical, he encouraged people to ridicule their opponents. He thought it was effective, but the truth is, ridicule is just an ad hominem argument, and it's the last resort of somebody who can't argue against you or answer you any other way. People are calling you names, they've already lost the argument. And Dr. Stan, we're just pointing to too many government websites. I mean, if people will look at this Federal Highway Administration website in the U.S. Department of Transportation, there's a whole section on it on public-private partnerships, PPP. And they're giving all the how-tos to state and local officials as to how to sell all of our highways, just like this Trans-Texas Corridor, to foreign interests, you know, like Sintra and Spain bought the Trans-Texas Corridor. They're going to build this new road parallel to Interstate 35, four football fields wide. And roads like the Chicago Skyway and the Indiana Toll Road, now the Pocahontas Parkway in Virginia, that's just been sold to an Australian investment group. There's a plan to sell all of our infrastructure, including schools, water resources, water departments, prisons, you name it, to have them all managed and operated and leased to foreign investment consortium. As preposterous as it sounds.
And of course, really, this is just a means of destroying the wealth of our nation. This is really what's been going on for some time.
That's right.
You can't keep spending more money than you're taking in indefinitely. And this is planned by our elitists. They've got us to buy all these things that we really don't need. We're consuming the vast majority of what China is putting out today. And of course, the other country, then China's buying things from other countries and giving them our dollars. And the thing is that all of these countries have all of the dollars. What do they do with it? Why, they remember that slogan that says, buy American. and they're going to buy American. Well, they're going to buy up the major highways and the major factories. We've already lost 25% of the remaining industrial capacity of this country. Most of our major manufacturers have moved offshore. The automotive industry is moving offshore. But now, of course, the Westinghouse used to be as American as apple pie. No longer. Westinghouse has been bought by a Japanese consortium. 25% of our major industries in the United States are no longer American industries. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California. But you go ahead, Jerome, please.
Well, you know, Dr. Stan, you're right. China now has $1 trillion of foreign exchange reserves. That's the most, that's historically a high. $700 billion of it, that $1 trillion that they have in foreign exchange currency, $700 billion of its dollar assets, half of which, about $350 billion, are in Treasury securities. Because we finance our huge and growing budget, federal budget deficits, by selling Treasury debt, Treasury securities, into the foreign exchange market. And, you know, China sneezed at Christmas time. They said they were going to hold fewer dollar assets in their foreign exchange reserves, and the dollar started, you know, plummeting on world finance currency markets. And we had to send five cabinet secretaries over to China to beg them to float their currency, and Bernanke, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, went over there too, and China refused to do it. China is operating the ports in Mexico. China, through Hutchison Whampoa, operates Lazaro Cardenas. Thanks to Robert Pastor, Hutchison Whampoa operates both ends of the Panama Canal. Hutchison Whampoa is in the joint venture with Lockheed Martin. Is going to put sensors all up and down the NAFTA superhighway and Interstate 35, the NAFTA corridor, the Trans-Texas corridor, this, according to the trade organization NASCO, the North American Super Corridor Coalition, Inc., which signed the deal with Lockheed and Hutchinson Whampoa to put these sensors. So China will have the data of all of the containers from China coming into the United States with little RFID, radio frequency ID chips in them. And all this data collected will go back to China in the United States as to where those containers are. That should raise some national security issues. China's not necessarily a friend. China, this past week, you know, just detonated a satellite in space with a weapon. They have one of their submarines that shadowed the Kitty Hawk off of Japan. They may have a new propulsion system for the submarines, their submarines, that we didn't even detect it. China is not a friend of the United States, but yet they hold so much of our foreign exchange currency, they can pull our chain and devalue the dollar anytime China wants to. We're totally within their grasp at this point.
In fact, they could simply destroy the financial stability of this nation by dumping those dollars on the open market and flooding all that money back into the United States. You see, they hold about, say, $700 billion. That is equivalent in actual cash to the entire amount of cash that the United States has printed. Now, we have a lot of money built upon credit, but $700 billion is about the total money in circulation in the United States, and China holds an equivalent amount in credit, and they push that back in the United States. Why, you can forget about the value of your CDs, of your annuities, of your bank deposits, of your pension funds. It will simply be like yesterday's sunset, gone forever. And of course, this miraculous development in China has all been built in large part by money from the United States, from Chase Manhattan Bank, from Goldman Sachs, from from the Citicorp. Major American corporations and banks have gone in and invested literally hundreds of billions of dollars to create the economic miracle in China, all built on money that's come from the United States. We've built up the best possible enemy that money could buy. Well, let's go to Mike, who's calling from Santa Cruz here. Hi, Mike. Did you have a question for Dr. Corsi?
Well, I had a comment regarding the public-private partnership thing and all this sale of assets. Just one very important piece of the puzzle is an executive order by President George Bush,
George H.W. Bush, the father.
Executive Order 12803.
Correct.
It's titled Infrastructure Privatization, and it outlines everything that you're talking about. And this is going back to 1992.
That was the executive order that's permitting all this to happen.
Yeah.
That's where it originated from. That executive order that George H.W. Bush signed in 1992 was the prelude to all of the PPP, the public-private partnerships. And right now, the Bush administration, George W. Bush, is actively teaching the states how to do it. Because the investment banker is holding these Euro money seminars. Just go search up Euro money seminars on the internet, or take a look at the articles I wrote last week in WorldNet Daily. You'll see their brochures. They're going to teach, there's a conference going to be held in March by Euro money seminars in Miami. It costs $3,500 to attend it. They want to get 50 state administrators, and they're going to teach them how to change the state laws, get the infrastructure ready, so they can sell their highways, their schools, their water departments, whatever. And it's being organized by the investment banks and the accounting firms. Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan, all the foreign investment capital firms, they're going to make billions and billions and billions of dollars selling in fees. Selling America's infrastructure to some foreigners. And that's the plan. The money's there on the table. They're greedy. They're going to go get it. At the end of the day, the end result here, all the public infrastructure that today is owned by the people of the United States will now be owned by Cintra in Spain and Macquarie in Australia and a dozen more international investment consortiums will have sold America to foreigners for investment bankers to get fees.
And I think what's really so incredible about this is that these freeways, these expressways, these have all been built with money paid for by the taxes of the American people. And the state governments, rather than raise taxes, they still want to be able to spend money and have their big fat pensions for the government employees and for the politicians. So here's a wonderful source of money.
They will simply
sell off the infrastructure that the people have paid for and use that money to spend today. But what about tomorrow? What about the future of the American people? And you have to understand that, like father, like son, George Herbert Walker Bush knew exactly what he was doing when he wrote that Executive Order 12803. And, of course, George W. Bush knows exactly what he is doing, too, because they are both globalists. They both come from these same globalist organizations, and their loyalty is not to the United States, but to this globalist dream of a new world order and a new world religion. And they distract our attention from what's going on here, why fighting a no-win war over in Iraq, never allowing the military to win the war, only allowing them to send our boys to fight and bleed and suffer and die. It's Vietnam all over again. Our military are not allowed to win. Anything else, Mike?
Well, the whole idea was sold to the public, whoever was paying attention back then. There was one article in The Economist magazine where this whole thing was billed as a big idea for how to pay down the national debt. In other words, basically America was up for sale. You can go down the list the way it's described. America was up for sale. It's been up for sale, and they're selling it. And it was to pay down the national debt, of all things. Well, what have you got left to work with if you sold it? What's left?
But have we really been selling down the national debt?
I don't know.
They've been getting the money, but they haven't been paying off the national debt.
That's the lie. The money comes into the state governments, and the state governments will then use it for other purposes. They won't pay down debt. And the real driving force here, like if you take a look at Cintra, C-I-N-T-R-A, in Texas, with the Trans-Texas Corridor, they're going to spend $180-some billion over 50 years. Well, Cintra ends up being one of the biggest campaign contribution funders in Texas, together with their construction company, Zacharias San Antonio. And, get Rick Perry and all these other greedy politicians with their hands out. Every time Cintra gets a new concession or a deal, they get paid. Well, that's fine, but at the end of the Trans-Texas Corridor construction, if somebody wants a change or an improvement in the highways in Texas, you're going to have to go to Spain to get the approval to do it.
Amen to that. Hey, but thanks. Anything else,
Michael? That sounds like a global community. Real quick about Michael Medved, and I'll be off. I believe, after listening to the guy, that he does have an agenda. And I say that because about 5 weeks ago, he devoted his whole program. It was called Conspiracy Day or something like that, where he just took the calls one after another. Everybody who had some conspiracy to reveal or whatever, he took the calls. He took the questions. He was up on the issues. He had the answers.
He's quick, as
could be for each one. Even Building 7, he said he looked at the videos and he had the whole explanation, everything about the economy, the war.
You know, and what I've told Michael Medved, and Michael Medved is refusing to debate me now, so let's get that out there. Joseph Farah just issued him an invitation, and he's refusing. John Hawkins is refusing to debate me. These guys do not want to be embarrassed because I'll show them too many government websites, and they can't deny that this is reality. This has nothing to do with John Kennedy's assassination. I believe that the only evidence that's out there is John Kennedy was probably killed by Lee Harvey Oswald. Nothing else has been proved. I'm not saying that 9/11 was caused by the government. I'm not saying any conspiracy theory. This is not a conspiracy theory. Documented on government websites.
All right, fine. Thanks very much, Mike.
Okay.
And let's go to Laverne calling from Spokane, Washington. Go ahead, Laverne.
Mr. Corsi, what do we do as Americans to stop this?
Well, first thing, you know, you're doing a great deal to listen to Dr. Stan's program. That's first, and get the information and to be able to answer these questions, because the effort that's being made by Michael Medved is not just Michael Medved. The congressmen are being given, you know, their talking points from the White House to say, oh, no, this is just a dialogue. SPP.gov puts up a myths versus facts section, and they just say, don't worry, it's all okay. Go back to sleep. We're just talking with our neighbors for prosperity and for security, and it's just a partnership. Don't worry. And if you don't read, you know, the 2005 and 2006 reports of the leaders, if you don't see how many new memorandum of understandings are being created that were not being shown, it sounds real good. But you know, there's no way a shadow government bureaucracy is approved in the Constitution. And this is exactly the kind of evolutionary step that was used in Europe to end up with the European Union. There are congressmen who are opposing this. I just wrote an article again this week where you've got Virgil Good from Virginia introducing resolutions to oppose this in the House. He's going to be joined. The opposing totalization of Social Security, that resolution was now joined by 27 or 29 congressmen. I think in the 110th Congress this will build. And I think it will especially build as President Bush pushes these really disastrous cases, like taking these two Border Patrol agents down in Texas and wanting to put them in prison because they fired their weapons at a drug dealer. Drug dealer got a shot in his behind, and now he's escaped to Mexico. Now he's got a lawyer. He testified with immunity at the trial of these two agents. They're in jail, and the drug dealer is about to get a $5 million settlement on a suit where he's going to sue the Border Patrol for shooting him.
Well, Laverne, you get people listening to our program, and
how do we keep track of these bills? Can you come on every once in a while?
Dr. Stan has had me on regularly, and I thank him for it very much.
And we will
need
have him
to
on
know
regularly
when these bills are out there.
We will have Dr. Corsi on as often as he'll come on. We'll try to get him on every couple of weeks, Laverne. And then, of course, your job is to get other people to listen. Take your notes. If you have access to the Internet, pull down Dr. Corsi's excellent articles on World Net Daily and, of course, on human events. I have them all filed away, and you'll certainly want to do the same thing. Thanks very much for calling.
Thank you.
And, Jerome, thank you so much for being with us. It's always a pleasure.
Well, Dr. Stan, it's always an honor to be with you. Thank you again.
Good night. God bless.
Good night.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. It was actually 2 days after the attack. That would have been the 13th. Gary Hart. I'm sorry. This would be the 14th of September. 3 days after the attack on the World Trade Center, Senator Gary Hart attended an emergency meeting of the Council on Foreign Relations, held in Washington, D.C. And this is what he said. there is the chance for the President of the United States to use this disaster to carry out what his father, a phrase his father used, I think, only once, and it hasn't been used since then, and that is a new world order. There is a chance for the President of the United States to use this disaster. That is for a new world order. Now, what's really so interesting about that is that you can actually get a copy, a transcript of that meeting. It's up on the CFR webpage, and that statement has been deleted. Somebody took it out of the transcript of what was said that day, but if you get the video we offer entitled The Day That Changed the World Forever, you'll see the video clip. In other words, they censored the transcript because they don't want you to understand what 9-1 was all about. The President of the United States may be able to use this disaster, of course, to bring about the New World Order. The video, the Day That Changed America Forever, put out by our good friend Dave Wagner. You want to get that. You want to get the other DVDs we have, and of course you can get that either in DVD or VHS, The Day That Changed America Forever, and hear Gary Hart get it, what he said. Understand it was censored. We do carry Dr. Jerome Corsi's excellent book, Minuteman, that goes into this subject. We actually have a new four-tape set on globalism, the threat of globalism. We have four-tape sets on immigration. You want to get our information. Understand, our leaders are traitors. They do not believe in America. They have a different agenda. And they want to destroy the sovereignty of our nation. Now, if you haven't read the Earth Charter, it's contained in our Sustainable Development Syllabus, and you should get the syllabus and the video together. If you are incapable of doing that, why, we'll be glad to send you free of charge a free copy of the Earth Charter. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. There is a master plan. It is written by the occultists, and all the people who participated in writing the Earth Charter are deeply involved in the occult. When they talk about the plan, it's always with a capital P, a capital P-L-A-N. It is deified. Why? Because, of course, it represents the God that they worship, which is not the God of the Bible. There is a dualism. There are people who actually worship Lucifer. He is, of course, the real God because he gives you freedom. The God that the Bible has all these restrictions. Thou shalt not do this. Thou shalt not do that. You need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to read our pamphlets on the occult hierarchy. There are three pamphlets, and they're really based upon my newsletters, and you can actually read those. They're compiled about 15 newsletters, and they will give you everything you need to know. You will not learn, if you went to college for 10 years and studied this, you won't learn what you'll learn in those three pamphlets. They're available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's the occult hierarchy. My book, Brotherhood of Darkness. Let me suggest another book, and it's called Satanic Crimes. It's excellent. We've just started carrying it, but we think it's an excellent book. Of course, Jerome Corsi's book, Minuteman. And then, of course, you'll want to get our four tape sets on globalism, on immigration. And then, of course, if you have not yet laid in a supply of long-term food, or you'd like to see a copy of our health catalog and the various things we're carrying, we are carrying iodorol now and the iodine compound, which my wife and I have started taking. Why, just give us a call. We'll be glad to send you a free catalog and either item, health or long-term food storage. Don't delay because, well, we're in real trouble. Pray for America. Pray for Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Christian civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and the views of our guests. And, well, we had hoped for this half hour we were going to have with us, or for this hour we were going to have with us Don Rogers, who's certainly one of my heroes. He actually served 18 years in the Senate of the state of California, and he never lost an election. He is an honest man who believed in the Constitution, and despite the fact he was attacked by the newspapers and the media, he always was reelected because people recognized that he was sincere, and even if they disagreed with him, they knew he was voting from a moral point of view. And after 18 years, he voted for the term limits because they felt this was a way of breaking the back of the Willie Brown machine in Sacramento. And of course, by voting for the term limits, Senator Rogers actually voted himself out of office. But that really didn't matter. He wasn't there. He didn't have to be there. He was there because he wanted to serve the people. It was well known in Sacramento that every day in his office in Sacramento, as one of the senior senators, he opened the day with prayer and would get his staff together, and they would pray for Christ's guidance during that period of time. And then, of course, unfortunately, it was a great loss for the state of California when he was actually retired. But he's a geologist by trade, and of course that's what happened. He actually returned to his profession, and he's been running his own business ever since then. And like so many of the politicians, when they get to Sacramento, they dislike the power, and they go from one position to another. And when they get termed out as an assemblyman, then they run for the Senate. And then when they get termed out for that, they run for tax collector or secretary of state or something else because they like the power. And that wasn't why Don Rogers was there at all. He was there, of course, to serve the people. Well, I don't know whether they're going to be able to get Don Rogers, because right now we're getting a fax tone on the... So I'm just going to give you a little music for a minute as I look and see if we can find another number, and we'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we've got Don Rogers coming on the line here, and I think you'll enjoy him because the Senator Rogers certainly spent his time really focusing on what was constitutional. Now, one of the big problems we have is we have a lot of legislators, both at the state and the national level, who have sworn to uphold the Constitution of the United States, and they don't know what the Constitution says. But the Constitution was an amazing document. It was written by men who feared the power of government. And because they feared the power of government, they wanted to restrict what the federal government could do, knowing full well that liberty and limited government were synonymous, and tyranny and total government were synonymous. And as Thomas Jefferson said so well, "In matters of politics, speak not to me of confidence in men, but bind them down... bind them down for mischief with the chains of the Constitution." And that, of course, is what we need to do. And we've got Senator Rogers, and when we get back from the break, he'll be right here with us. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Senator Rogers, thank you so very much for being with us.
You bet.
All right. We've got an awful connection there. I'm going to ask my producer. Well, maybe. No, I'm going to ask my producer to go ahead and. Senator, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. I don't know what's wrong with it.
Well, I don't know what's wrong with it, but I'm going to ask you to hang up and ask my producer to call you right back
again.
Okay,
all right, fine. Thank you.
Thank you, and so I'll ask Ari to go ahead and see if we can get Senator Rogers back again. We just seem to be having all sorts of problems, but Senator Rogers is certainly one of my heroes, and he was a man who was willing to give up 18 years of his life to serve the people here in the state of California, and he did a great job. And of course, he and Senator Mountjoy were there, and they really, even though they were always in the minority, they had the respect of the other senators, and actually, we can thank Senator Rogers here in the state of California for the fact that we do not have a death tax in California. Of course, we still have a federal death tax, but it used to be that you had a federal death tax, and then you had a state death tax, and after, of course, you've lost a loved one, and you tried to sell your estate, well, there wasn't any money left. By the time the federal government and the state got through with it, they'd taken the vast majority of your estate. And so Senator Rogers actually worked for many years and actually defeated the state death tax, and at least here in California we no longer have that death tax. Senator Rogers, I was just telling him how you almost single-handedly did away with the death tax.
Well, I had a lot of help, Dr. Stan. A lot of people signed those petitions, and then they voted it out 2-1 in 1982, and since that time we saved California families over $50 billion.
Oh, but of course the politicians are furious because they want money to spend, after all.
No.
I mean, that's how they spend themselves into office. They reward their friends. They give themselves large paychecks and lots of pensions and benefits and health insurance. And after all, if the people keep their own money, how are the politicians going to be able to spend it?
Hey, well, I tell you, I wasn't too popular up there in Sacramento after we got rid of that tax and took away that $50 billion away from the big spenders. So I was not the most popular guy on the block.
Well, I'm certainly glad that you did, because I think that everybody has benefited from this. The government never has enough money. And it was Will Rogers who said that no man's purse or property are safe when the legislature is in session. And that's really what it's all about. Government has no money. The only money it has is what it takes away from us by force to spend for its own purposes.
Right. No, you're right.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Senator Rogers was saying that after he, with the help of the population, was able to get the legislation through, they got the petition signed, they put a state initiative in, and they voted out the death tax. And 2-1 in favor of doing away with the death tax. And that deprived the politicians here in Sacramento of about $50 billion they could have spent for their own entertainment. But I'll tell you what, Senator Rogers, right now, you know, this last piece of last time around when we went to the polls, the people of California voted for $40 billion in bonds so that we can spend ourselves into prosperity, and now the governor is asking for another $40 billion in bonds. It's free money. It's not going to cost anything. Isn't that wonderful? And we can have all that prosperity and the new highways, and it's not going to cost anything?
Yeah, well, it'd be nice if that were true, but you and I both know it's not true. It's another tax, and our children and grandchildren are going to be paying for it, and it's not fair to them. You're right. Government's always insatiable as far as getting more money. They never have enough. But I tell you, Dr. Stan, I found out long ago that the only way you keep government under control, that's on city, county, or state, or federal level, is give them less money. Because if they can get their hands on the money, they're going to expand and get stronger, and the people get weaker financially. So I tell people, don't vote for any bond issues. Don't ever vote for a tax increase or assessment increase or fee increase. I was up there 18 years, and I never voted for a tax increase of any kind.
Well, you know, here, unfortunately, what we have is we have ever-increasing size of government, and the people who work for government will always vote for more money for government so they can get more money. And of course, then they government employees will vote for the legislature, so give them bigger pensions and more health care and more benefits. And I think it was down in San Diego where they've actually, the county is bankrupt because of that policy of voting these massive, you know, pensions for people. They could retire when they were 50 years old and live off the taxpayers, but there wasn't enough money. What are they doing down there, do you know?
Well, I think they finally trying to turn it around. They found out that what they were doing is they bankrupted the county, and so now they're trying to come out of the ashes, and they've cut back on a lot of huge pensions and all of this expensive retirement plans and all that. So they're trying to turn it around, but I don't know if it's going to be tough for them to do it. But the thing is, they shouldn't have gotten into the position in the first place.
But, of course, the thing is that the government employees voted for the politicians to give them the most.
Well, that's kind of the nature of people. You know, everybody wants something for nothing. And I get sick and tired of talking about where we got these entitlements. I'm entitled to this. I'm entitled to that. And really, we're not entitled to all of this. It's only, as you say, the people vote for politicians that'll give them something for nothing. And it's kind of human nature, I guess, to want something for nothing. But people are going to have to learn that they better start earning what they want and living within their means, government as well as families. So I tell you, I'm afraid we're headed for some tough times, Dr. Stan.
Well, even Mr. Bernanke, the man who's in charge of our Federal Reserve Board, testified before Congress that, you know, we've got to do something about the Social Security and Medicare system because, you know, by 2030, I've forgotten whatever figure he used, but, you know, the whole thing is going to come unraveled. Right now, those of us, and I get Social Security and I get Medicare, I'm living off my grandchildren's incomes. I mean, this is really what it is, because they're stealing the money from you know, the money's being put in now, and they're just simply taking that money and spending it, and we're living a great life.
Yeah,
but
I know.
There's no money in Social Security Fund. There's no money for the Medicare Trust Fund, and our government has debts going between $50 and $70 trillion. That's the real what the amount of money our government owns. There's not that much money in the world.
I know. And, you know, there's a cruel tax that most people are not aware of, and it's the tax of inflation. They create more and more dollar bills, and then those dollar bills go into circulation, and it dilutes the value of the existing dollars that are out there. If you got $100, and you print another $100 and put that out in circulation, then what's each dollar worth, Dr. Stan? 50 cents. So that's inflation, and that is a cruel, cruel tax. Most people don't realize that they're being taxed every day through this inflation.
But, of course, the people who are working behind the scenes know that. They just don't want the people to know that they're stealing the value of everything they've saved through the inflation tax. And, you know, then, of course, you turn around, you sell something you bought, and you make more money, then they tax you on top of that. So they destroy the value of your currency, and they destroy the value of the increased value of your assets. And it's all to give more money to the politicians so they can control us. Because any government that can provide whatever we need has to be able to take whatever we have. And the most carefully kept secret in the world is government doesn't have any money.
Yeah.
What it takes from us, what it prints up, it inflates, or what it borrows from future generations, and they're doing all of those three things just as fast as they can.
And if you total up all the taxation on every level, the government's taking over half of what everybody makes right now.
Right. And right here in California, I'm really very, very concerned. I mean, Arnold Schwarzenegger has become the biggest spender of all time. I mean, he's talking about $120 billion of expenditures by borrowing the money. And he makes a big point about, well, we're going to balance the budget. We're going to balance the budget. But he doesn't talk about all the debt they're taking on. And someday that debt's going to have to be paid off, or I don't see how it ever will be paid off. Do you?
No, I think what's going to happen is that that the debt will renege on it. We just will not live up to our debts. And the country will in effect declare bankruptcy. And a lot of these other countries that are holding our treasuries and our dollar bills, they're going to be holding an empty bag. And the integrity of this country financially is going to go right down the drain.
Well, of course, one of the things they could do would be to sell off the infrastructure. They could sell off our bridges. They could sell off our freeways. They could sell off our overpasses. I mean, they could sell off our national parks. They could sell off America and maybe help at least somewhat to pay off the debt, at least here in the state of California. But this is a problem all across the nation. I just think that California leads the way, and we're doing the most stupid things. And the fact that the people of the state of California would believe that we can borrow $40 billion and it's not going to cost us anything and it's not going to raise taxes, what do they in the world are they thinking of?
They're living in a dream world. It's not, the politicians are not being honest with the people. So I'm concerned, and I think the only answer is to try to elect people who will tell the truth about our fiscal situation and will stop this inflation and stop this spending money like a bunch of drunken, I like sailors, so I shouldn't say that, but I was going to say drunken sailors, but they're spending money like it's going out of style.
But of course, you know, if you try to run, and do the right thing, the newspapers will attack you, the television will attack you, the radio will attack you. How did you ever get reelected over and over again for 18 years as an honest man?
Well, I tell you, it worked out really well because in my district, which was the southern San Joaquin Valley, Kern County, Kings County, Inyo County, Puerto San Bernardino County, the people liked my philosophy, liked the way I voted, my voting record. So I ran nine campaigns, Dr. Stan, counting the city council of Bakersfield and then the assembly and the state senate, and I won every election. And I don't mean to sound immodest, but it was because the people like my voting record, and I told it like it was. And as I said, I never voted for a tax increase the entire time. And people realize they're being taxed to death. So they liked what I was doing. So they kept reelecting me.
Well, I think it was it. And I think you must have done an awful lot of work of education, too, because you know they have subtle little ways of ridiculing and demonizing people who really stand for principles.
Well, you know, I voted against all of those tax increases and fee increases and assessment increases. In fact, I think I told you this before, but they nicknamed me in the state senate. My nickname was Senator No, because I voted against all their bills.
Well, I think we've got a congressman. They've nicknamed that as well, and that's Congressman Ron Paul. You know, I think this is one of the most exciting things that's really happened recently, is the fact that Congressman Ron Paul is considering running for the presidency. He is certainly a man of integrity. He's no dotted charmer like Bill Clinton, but Bill Clinton may be a charmer, but he's not an honest man. On the other hand, Ron Paul, I've followed his career for, I guess, since the 1960s, and he's always been an honest man. He's an obstetrician who gave up his profession because he believed in America and he wanted to try to save it, and he's been back in there Congress a couple of times, and actually he was there in, I don't know, maybe the 70s or so, and then I think he was first elected about 75 and was there for a time, quit, came back in 94. He's been back there again since 1994, and he's always votes no on things. Many times it'll be 434-1.
Oh yeah, listen, he's one of my heroes. And you notice he only votes for things that are constitutional. He won't vote for a bill if it's unconstitutional. And I really like that.
Well, I think that, ladies and gentlemen, there is something out there. Things are really happening. A lot of good things are happening. Today, for instance, the Senate Bill 1, which was going to restrict the ability, maybe even people like me, to say things on the radio. At least that part of SB 1 that we were really felt would restrict our freedom of speech was actually voted down last night. And then apparently the hate bill has been pretty well gutted. So good things are happening. We'll tell you more in just a minute. Well, Senator Rogers, we were talking about, you know, some of the good things that are happening there. I don't know if you were aware of the fact that that bad part of SB 1, certainly there was an amendment that was put in, it passed, and so at least that was gutted out. The rest of it was to limit the lobbying, and I have nothing against limiting lobbying. But, of course, when they try to go after, you know, small organizations that are trying to educate people, that was beyond the pale.
Yeah, I agree. And fortunately, that part was taken out. That part 220, section 220 of the bill was taken out, which was the bad part. And I was delighted to see that. But you're right. It was originally an attempt to just quiet the voice of the people, to make it very difficult for people to call in and or fax in or email in to their elected people back in Washington and express their position. It was really scary, and was a clear violation of the First Amendment.
And of course, what was so interesting is the legislation was put forward by Senator Lieberman and Senator Levine, and I mean both Democrats. When Lieberman ran in his state, actually, in the primary, he lost. And so he ran as independent. And, of course, there was a Republican who had been nominated by the Republican Party, the Democrat who had been nominated by the Democratic Party, and Lieberman, who's suddenly running as independent, with the full backing of the Bush administration, who would not back the Republican nominee, was backing Lieberman, who is a left-wing Democrat.
Yeah.
And, of course, the Bush administration got in a left-wing Democrat and then swung the control of the United States Senate to the Democrat Party. Why would the Bush administration do that if they're really Republicans?
Well, I don't know. That was a real puzzle. But, you know, I don't feel sorry for the Republicans back in Washington. Not all of them. There are some good ones, but for the most part, because they did nothing for several years, 6 years or so, or even, I guess, longer than that, they did nothing about securing our borders. They kept spending money like it was going out of style and running up the national debt. This is why they lost and why they lost power. And I have to say, I don't feel sorry for them.
I don't either. In fact, they betrayed the conservatives. They talked on the right side, we're pro-life, but they never saved one child's life. In fact, they were actually increasing spending for Planned Parenthood and for population control throughout the world, but they could never tell the pro-life Republicans that. And, of course, they had the biggest deficit ever recorded throughout the entire history of our time. They had the biggest trade deficits ever recorded in the history of our nation or any nation. They expanded government. Certainly the No Child Left Behind program, Ted Kennedy's legislation. Ted Kennedy couldn't get it through, so George Bush got it through. The Medicare drug bill was Ted Kennedy's legislation. Ted Kennedy couldn't get it through, so his good friend George Bush got it through. Pretending to be a conservative, pro-life, moral man, there are far more homosexuals in key positions in the Bush administration there ever were in the Clinton administration. And what the thing that really disturbs me, Senator Rogers, is where is the outcry from the Christian leaders of America?
Well, you know, you're right. That's a huge block. It could be a very, very important, influential block of voters. But where are the leaders? Well, why aren't they standing up and speaking out?
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest, of course, is Senator John Rogers, who spent 18 years in the Senate of the state of California. And in case you think that's just sort of a casual job, part-time job, remember, if California was a sovereign nation, we would be the sixth largest economy in the entire world. California, if it were a nation, would be the sixth largest economy in the world. It is a powerful economy of one of the largest states. I forgot what our population is, but
it's about 30 million, Dr. Stan.
Right, and does that count all the illegal immigrants we've got? Or?
I don't know. Probably not.
All right. Well, anyway, of course. We've got. A tremendous economy, a tremendous amount of money, and Senator Rogers was up there helping to guide that for 18 years. And, of course, now he's in retirement, but still watching what's going on today. And we're simply talking about what's going on back in Washington, D.C., where the Republican leadership has betrayed the people who put their trust in them. We're constantly getting requests from the National Republican Committee for money. Please, if you're out there, don't give your money to the National Republican Party. Give it to good candidates, you know, who need your money. In fact, if you have any money right now, we pledge it to Congressman Ron Paul for his presidential run. That's the most important thing we could do right now. It would be nice to know that we had a candidate who believed in America and was not a globalist or dedicated to the destruction of our sovereignty. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, you said, you know, I'm not retired. I'm a geologist. That's my background. And I'm still working in that field. And, you know, I see our governor has bought into this global warming fiasco, which is a hoax. President Bush is supporting it. And let me tell you, I'm not arguing that the Earth is not getting warmer. But my argument is this, that mankind's activity has absolutely nothing to do with the warming of the globe or the cooling of the globe. There's nothing mankind can do to change it one way or the other. It's a cyclical or cyclical event, and it's going to happen. It's happening now, but it'll eventually pass, and it'll cool off again. So it has to do with the activity of sunspots. Sunspot activity, and mankind really has no contribution whatsoever. And they talk about greenhouse gases and all of this, and I can certainly give you information that will show that is absolutely a farce.
Maybe we ought to get you on here some evening. We'll just do a program on that. But you know what I love to do when these people are ranting and raving about the global warming and the snows of Kilimanjaro and the Arctic ice caps melting, and I like to say, can you explain to me something? Why do they call Greenland Greenland?
when the Norwegian
Leif Erikson
discovered the continent there, why did he name it Greenland? Because it was green. Now it's covered with ice and snow. Oh, I tell you. And you know, let me ask you another question, Dr. Stan, or ask your listeners a question. Carbon dioxide, which they're talking about, is the greenhouse gas and causing this problem, you know, with the warming. Carbon dioxide is 1.5 times heavier than air. Well, now, when you produce carbon dioxide out of your automobile or your factory or from whatever source, if it's 1.5 times heavier than air, which way is it going to go?
It's going to go down
into
the plant.
It's going to go down, not up.
I know. Well, of course, you know, in fact, if you look at the greenhouse gases, I don't think it's more than about 2 or 3% of greenhouse gases anyway, because the predominant greenhouse gas is moisture.
Right, right. So, you know, it's another hoax just to try to stampede the people into allowing government to get more control over their lives, and it's going to be very expensive to try to do what they're trying to do, and it's going to have not one iota of effect on the temperature of the globe.
Well, you know, as somebody was saying, you know, it's just been freezing cold here this last week or so, not only here in California, but all across the country. And where's Al Gore talking about global warming?
Yeah, and you know, he's talking about the ice, the polar cap in the north melting, and the polar bears are endangered or are going to be endangered. Well, let me tell you, in 1930 and 1940, it was a heck of a lot warmer. There was more melting, and the polar bears did really well. In fact, they're doing extremely well right now.
In fact, you know, sure, the snows of Kilimanjaro are going to melt. We are in we started actually warming up about 1600, and we've been warming ever since then. But before that, of course, we were getting colder, and then we turned around. We have cyclical phases. They know that. But it doesn't matter how ridiculous something is. If you say it often enough, people will believe. Gore knows this is a lie. He's part of the group that put together the Kyoto Protocol, which is aimed at destroying the industrial capacity of our country, because Al Gore hates America, and his loyalty is to the one world government and the New World Order. Thank you. Well, this is Dr. Stan Backer at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Senator Don Rogers, who is a constitutionalist, and when he was in Sacramento, he followed the Constitution. He tried to limit the power of government over our lives, and for 18 years, he fought a long and valiant battle. Now, if you have a question or comment, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And please give us a call, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295, if you have a question for Senator Rogers, as we're going to be talking about what is the function of government, what should government really be doing, and where will we end up if we continue on our current course with ever more government, ever more regulation, ever more control. So, Senator, let me just ask you the question to begin with. What should the function of our federal government be? What should the function of our state government be?
Well, just read the Constitution. And the founding fathers wrote it, and the ones who wrote our state constitutions, they put in controls for limited government. Government is supposed to be limited. And if you if you look at the Bill of Rights, after they wrote the Constitution, they even added the Bill of Rights to further restrict the power of federal government. And the Tenth Amendment, you know, if you paraphrase that, it says federal government, if there's anything we've forgotten, you can't do that either. So the function of government is to protect us from foreign enemy, to coin money, and to and here's something very important, and to provide. To promote general welfare, not provide general welfare, but promote it. And there's a big difference between providing and promoting. Some people used to tell me in Sacramento, they said, well, look, read the preamble of the Constitution. It says we're supposed to provide for the general welfare of the people. I said, it says you're to promote the general welfare, not provide, and there's a big difference. So it should be very limited. Just if people want to know the proper role of government, pull out their Constitution and read there exactly what was given to the federal government and to state government and the state Constitution. And anything beyond that, government is out of line. They've gone beyond the controls and beyond their bounds.
And I agree with you completely, and I think it's time that people read and studied the Constitution of the United States. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Senator Don Rogers. And, of course, we're talking really about the function of government from a man who worked within the system for 18 years, and now, of course, he's a geologist. So when he voted himself out of office by voting for term limits, he could return to his own business, and he runs his own business. He never had to be a state senator. He was there to serve the people. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we had more people who were there to serve the people rather than to serve themselves and get the perks and the advantages and the insurance and the prestige and all of those things that so many of the people who go into politics lust after? Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. One of the big things, apparently, that the current legislature in Washington, D.C. is going to do is come up with a wonderful program to provide health care for everyone in America. Everyone will have health care. They're going to have health care for all children. It's sort of like, every child's entitled to education. Why shouldn't they be entitled to health care? And there are so many people out there who don't have health care insurance. And I mean, they have to go to public clinics, and they may or may not get seen. And so we have so many people who are just dying from lack of health care. I mean, how do you feel about this whole idea of the federal government, and here, of course, in the state of California as well, but both the federal and the state government making sure that everybody is cared for? And here in the state of California, the governor is advocating it. Back in Washington, D.C., the American Medical Association, the American Association of Retired People. I mean, all of these organizations which have traditionally opposed socialized medicine, at least the AMA has, are now embracing it. Isn't that wonderful? They're so filled with compassion for the people.
Well, you know, if you really look at the correct numbers, because, you know, politicians, they do a wonderful job of Mickey Mousing numbers, but they claim a certain number of so many thousands or millions of people who are uninsured. That is not true. If you look at the number of people that, excuse me, that do have insurance coverage, private insurance coverage, or some kind of coverage now, there are very few people that are not covered. Most of the ones that are not covered are the illegals that come into our country, into our state, illegally. That's the biggest problem there. If we would secure our borders, we could eliminate a lot of the problems. It's absolutely inundating and destroying a very fine medical system in this state and in this country.
Well, I had to talk to a gentleman the other day, and he was telling me that his secretary had some chest pain. She didn't have any health insurance. She went to the hospital. She was worked up. She had an EKG, cardiogram, maybe a CT scan. She was there for maybe 6 hours. Her hospital bill was about $10,000. Now, that may sound absurd, but I'll never forget. I went into the hospital one time for a minor surgical procedure on my shoulder. I didn't even get a meal there. I went in, I had the surgical procedure. I think I may have stayed the night, I don't remember. My bill was $13,000. No, I don't think I stayed the night because I didn't get a single meal in the hospital. You know, for $13,000, you'd expect to get a meal. How can you deal with expenses like that? I mean, how can people, the average person out there, you know, actually, you know, pay their health care? I mean, if they don't have insurance, you know, they can't afford it because it's really fantastically expensive. What's going to happen to the people? How are we going to provide health care for people, you know, when health care has become ridiculously expensive?
Well, any time you have a government program, there's always going to be a lot of fraud and a lot of excessive charging, and that's part of the problem right there. We had a wonderful private medical system in this state, in this country before government became involved, and you know, I know it would be impossible now, but you take even Medicare, that thing is just absolutely skyrocketed in cost. People think, well, gee, it's not costing me anything, so I'll go, I get a cough or something, or a cold, I go to the emergency room. Well, then the costs go up. Well, if people had to pay for it out of their own pocket, then maybe they'd think twice about running to the emergency room for something that was not necessary. So, but they get the feeling, well, you know, it's free. It's not free. Somebody's going to pay for it.
Well, I think that, of course, people really don't understand the economics of health care, and I was part of this for a long time. Why does the hospital charge $10,000 for somebody going in and have a few minor checkovers? Well, first of all, they have to cost you. They've got to pay for all the illegal immigrants for coming there that they can't charge. Secondly, they lose money on every Medicare and Medicaid patient that comes into there. The government doesn't pay the full cost of it. So the hospital has to shift that to the people who pay insurance. But the thing is, the insurance companies all have contracts with the hospital, so then they've got to shift it to the non-insured. So you go into the hospital now, and you don't have insurance, well, they're going to charge you $10,000. Now, what you want to do is go to them and say, this is a phony bill. You know it's a phony bill. I know it's a phony bill. I'll pay you 25 cents on the dollar. Or they'll say, well, pay us 30 cents on the dollar. We'll forget it.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to understand that the hospitals are trapped in the system. The doctors are trapped in the system. When I was practicing medicine in 1965, you could get a hospital, you know, room for $50 a day. And, of course, you got good care, and that covered everything. And you could buy a health insurance policy for about $50 a month if you were 65 years or older. But when the government got involved, everything changed, and they began encouraging hospitals to expand. They paid their bill plus whatever the hospital wanted to bill. That was all right, and we'll pay you 1 or 2 or 3% above that. Well, when you're getting paid on a cost-plus basis, Do you have an incentive to charge less or more?
More. And how much do you think you would be charged today, Dr. Stan, in the hospital for a box of Kleenex or an aspirin?
Oh, probably $25, $30, maybe. If it was on sale. Otherwise, you can go up to $50. You know, some of these charges are just so ridiculous. If you've ever really read the hospital bill, I talked to a lady the other day who went in for it. I even forgot what they did and put a stent in her. Just it was $93,000. Now, I mean, if it had been an honest bill, it probably would have been $6,000 or $8,000, but they have to jack the bill up because they know Medicare is not going to pay it, so they have to run the bill up so maybe Medicare will pay them $8,000 or $10,000, something like that. And then, of course, again, end up losing money. And this is the great tragedy. We've created a monster, and there's no problem facing America today that a new government program won't make worse. And I agree with this, Senator. But they've created this terrible problem, and the whole thing is going to have to collapse, and we're going to have to get back, you know, to things where people pay for things out of their own pocket. They wouldn't be taking all these expensive medicines, many of which make them worse.
No, you're right. If people had to pay for it directly out of their own pocket, you would see a lot less abuse, a lot less fraud and padding of the bills that you see now. So it's just... But, you know, it's just almost out of control now. I'm sure it would be politically impossible to reverse it and to get rid of something like that, like the Medicare program or Medi-Cal or whatever. And it's unfortunate because once people get something, they get a program going and they feel like it's free, it's just almost politically impossible to ever take it away. The best thing is never start it in the first place.
Well, unfortunately, they did start it. They didn't listen to people like you and me. And basically, the whole idea is really not concerned about the widows and the orphans and the poor people without health care. It's all about control. And these people who pretend to be so concerned, the Bobby Kennedys of the world, so filled with compassion for the common man, it's all about control.
No, I agree. It's just... Well, they believe, see, that they're so much smarter than we, than the people. And so if you let them plan your life for you, tell you where you live, where you work, who you associate with, that you'll really be much happier because you're too dumb to plan your own life, so they have to plan it for you because they're so much smarter. I disagree. There's nobody that can plan Dr. Stan's life better than Dr. Stan. Nobody can plan my life better for me than I can. But they think they're so much smarter, and boy, if you just let them take charge and control everything, then boy, what a wonderful utopia we would have.
I think people have to really understand there really is an elitist mentality among some of these people. They would, in another era, they would have been the feudal lords. They want to provide for you. Of course, they want to use your own money so they can control you. And any government that can provide whatever you need has to be able to take what you have, and any government that can provide for you from the cradle to the grave has got to be able to control you from the cradle to the grave, and you can't have a government that provides for you and be free. And so people are going to have to somewhere have to make that ultimate decision. Am I going to be looked after by government, or am I going to be a free individual? But in a feudalistic system, the feudal lord provides. Until people understand that, this is what these ideas are all about. They're not about human compassion. And you notice how you turn on the television and they have a picture that just pulls you at their heartstrings about this poor person who's having all these terrible problems. And the reason he's having these terrible problems is because of all the government programs. When I practiced medicine, we had a county hospital system. Every county in the entire United States had a county hospital that was responsible for looking after the health care of the indigents. That was required. And they did. And nobody went without medical care.
You know, did I tell you a story about my friend that went to New Zealand on vacation?
No,
go ahead. Talking to a New Zealander. And he asked him, he said, doesn't it bother you that the New Zealand government is taking 70% of everything that you make? And the guy said, no, if they provide me with free education and free food and free medical care and a free place to live, they could take 100% of what I earn. And it wouldn't bother me. And my friend said, you know, he said, it's funny you'd say that. We had a system like that in America. about 170 years ago. It was called slavery. And you think about it, the plantation owner provided everything for the slave, but the slave had everything except no freedom.
Well, you know, it reminds me of time I used to get invited up to the University of California here to come and talk to the students there. And, of course, because they know I was a conservative, they could always get me up there and ridicule me. And the last time I was ever invited to go up there was by a professor who, had a class on, sort of on political science. And there were about 20 students there. I went in and, of course, presented the conservative philosophy. And they were all ridiculing and sort of snickering and laughing. And I'm sitting there wondering, what am I doing wasting my time talking to these kids? They honestly believe that it's the function of government to provide everything for people. They've been indoctrinated in socialism. And I noticed one of the young men had very high cheekbones. And, you know, I think sometimes Senator God does intervene in the affairs of men and gives us ideas. And I looked around the room and I said, do you honestly believe that it's the function of government to provide for the health of all the people? And everybody nodded in assent. And I said, do you think it's the function of government to provide for the education of everybody? And they all nodded. And I said, do you think it's a function of government to provide housing for everybody? And they all nodded. And I said, well, you know, there's one group here in America. The government's provided for their health and education and welfare for the last 100 years. And that's the American Indian living on the American reservation. Is that the sort of life you want for the American people? And, you know, the students, they could see it. And they, you know, they carried my valise out to my car. They congratulated me. They shook hands with me, and I've never been invited back to the university again.
You turned the students around, but you didn't do much for the professor, did you?
Yeah, because the professor wanted to be one of the feudal lords.
Right. And, you know, in all fairness to New Zealand, they were going broke. Their country was going downhill. They completely flipped now and turned it around. They cut out all of these freebies and entitlements, and New Zealand is now really coming out, and their economy is really strong now. So I want to make that clear. New Zealand has really turned things around.
Well, yeah, it's really very interesting. About 44 years ago, it was just after I came to, maybe 46 years ago, about 1960, one of the doctors here in Santa Cruz, where I live, had just come back from South America in Uruguay. And he was telling me about this wonderful system they had in Uruguay where you could work for an employer for 10 years and then you could retire at half pay. That was the government rule. And then you could get a job working for another employer for 10 years and of course you could then retire in 10 years. You got two complete salaries at 20 years. Well, then you went to work for a third employer, fourth employer, and so when you retired at 60 years of age, you had four half-time salaries there. And he said it was sort of great society, and everybody was so happy with it, and they were all making so much money. And the only trouble was, a few years later, Uruguay went bankrupt, and they had to do away with the whole system. People don't understand that when you have a system that doesn't work, there's not enough money. Employers simply close up shop; the whole economy closes down, and it's all because of government rules and government regulations. Only in a free society, where a man is responsible for himself, is there any hope, of course. There is a place where the local community would provide a poorhouse so that nobody would starve, where you would have soup kitchens, but whatever you try to provide a utopian existence for people, eventually it goes bankrupt.
Yeah, I'm afraid that's where we're headed in this country, unfortunately. We never seem to learn from history. We keep repeating the same mistakes over and over. And I feel for the future of our country.
And what was that old saying? The one thing we learn from history is that we never learn from history.
Yes.
our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question or comment for our Senator Rogers, or are you concerned about what's happening to our country? Have you been reading and studying the Constitution? Do you know about the amazing documents, the Declaration of Independence, that said from whence our freedom comes? It comes from God. That's why, of course, they had to get God out of our schools. They couldn't let people understand that freedom comes from God. and the governments are instituted among men to protect our God-given rights. That's what it says in the Declaration of Independence. But you know there are not very many people who know that today, Senator.
No, unfortunately. Most people, if you ask them about the Constitution, you ask them to read it, it'll take them an hour just to find their copy of the Constitution. So I wish more people would read it, and I sure wish more politicians would read it and abide by it.
Well, of course, we're working with a group called the Institute of the Constitution, and of course, we put their people on every single month on all of our programs, and urge people actually to get a little kit that they put out, the Institute of the Constitution, where they can teach others about the Constitution. They have Dr. John Eidsmo, and the 12 half-hour lectures. And by the time you finish that, you know the Constitution. And you understand the secret of our freedom, and that is limiting the power of the federal government over the lives of the American people. And we'll be back here in just a moment to wrap up tonight's program here with Senator John Rogers. Well, Senator, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program for us.
Well, I just want to take a minute, Dr. Stan, to say thank you for all you do for your program, for getting this information out to the people and your listeners. There aren't very many programs like yours, not enough. And I tell you, the American people are really wonderful, wonderful people. And if you only remind them and maybe provide a little leadership in the right direction, they immediately sense what's right and what's wrong and what's proper. And they'll come right behind you and support you. So if it weren't for programs like yours, though, we would be in worse shape than we are. So thanks a lot for all you do. And for I know it's sometimes a very thankless task, and you feel like sometimes that you're spinning your wheels or butting up against a stone wall, but you're not. There are a lot of really fine people out there who agree with what you say, and agree with what you're trying to do. So don't be discouraged. Just keep on keeping on. And I tell you, I've got a lot of faith in the American people, and we can turn this thing around and get back to where we're supposed to be with limited constitutional government and turn our country around economically and quit trying to be the policeman of the world. And I believe in a strong America, but I don't believe we need to try to police the world. So thanks a lot for having me on, Dr. Stan. I really appreciate your having me on.
Well, I appreciate it. I hope I can get you on our early morning program and do it. And, you know, we've got so much to be thankful for. We have the Internet. We've never had it before. We've got more and more programs just like mine with other people who are out there, and I know half a dozen of them doing just what I'm doing, just average guys that for one reason or another were given the opportunity to start doing talk radio, and there's a growing listening audience out there. I think more and more people are turning off the television and listening to alternative radio. We have so much going for us. I think the other side's really worried. That's why I think that they're moving as rapidly as they are to pass legislation that will allow the institution of martial law in America. And we've got to get the people educated as quickly as we can. We're in a race for time. We're in a race for the survival of America, of Christian civilization. But thank you for everything you do, Senator. I hope I can call on you from time to time and have all of my audiences listen to your benefit of your wisdom.
Well, you bet, Dr. Stan. I appreciate being on. I look forward to the next time we're together.
Good night, and God bless you. Well, there was Senator John Rogers here, and, of course, one of the really great senators we had here in the state of California. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I hope you enjoyed our program this evening. Just talking about philosophy, how can you explain to people about what's happening in medicine? How can you explain to people what happened before we had all the socialist programs? Nobody starved to death in America. And, you know, this whole idea that the government, federal government, had to provide for people is all based upon a lie and is a violation of our Constitution. Nobody starved to death because it was the function of every community to provide for those people who really didn't have a means of getting money, but, you know, then provide for their housing. We had a poorhouse where people could go. You had, you know, a county hospital where they could get health care. but we had something known as Christian charity. How far we've come from Christian charity, where today we have something called, entitlements. It went from Christian charity to welfare, and then, of course, to entitlements. So understand what this is all about. Understand the fundamentals of America. Contact the Institute of the Constitution. Start teaching our way of life, and that's the only way we're going to be able to preserve it. Well, we do hope that many of you out there will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. Quite frankly, we need your help to retain the some 50 to 60 outlets we have every single week now, where we reach out, maybe sometimes just half an hour a week, but at least people are hearing the truth. And then, of course, we would suggest that if you have not yet made your preparations for the very real possibility that we are going to see some cataclysmic events right here in the United States, that the government is planning on it, and that's why they passed legislation now that reversed the Posse Comitatus Act, why they're setting up detention camps across America. What you need to do, of course, is make sure that you have some supplies of the health products that you would need. We're talking about vitamins, minerals, that you have certainly stores of preserved food. I hope you would never need them, but it's far better to have them and not need them than need them and not have them. And if you'd like to get our catalogs, or maybe even decide to do something now while supplies are available, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. We'll send you a food catalog or a health product catalog. We'll be glad to send you one of our regular catalogs about all the books and videos and audio tapes we have that outline the true nature of the spiritual battle we're engaged in. If you have not yet read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. You need to get our four tapes set on the supernatural. You need to get our four tapes set on Satanism and deliverance. You need to get our four tapes set on Aleister Crowley. You need to get our four tapes set on globalism. And, of course, this move towards world government. We've got probably 60 to 84 tape sets. We've got a great new 4 tape set on why did the buildings come down, interviews with people who were there. And you've never heard their stories before. Why? Because they don't dare let you know what really happened on the morning of September 11th, that Tuesday morning. Certainly, if you want to have a pretty good grasp of it, let me suggest you get our three little pamphlets. They're called Foreknowledge 911. They're inexpensive. Or you can go up on the internet at RadioLiberty.com and pull down our August, September, October, November, and December 2006 newsletters and copy them and read them and reread them and challenge what you read. And if you want the documentation, we have it. And then join us in this truly spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. There are people who hate America, and many of them are in the highest levels of our government, and they belong to secret societies, so secret that they cannot even mention them. And when Tim Russert asked both President Bush and John Kerry in the year 2004 about the Skull and Bone Society, both men replied, "It's so secret we can't discuss it." You want to know what it's about? You need to get the book Satanic Crimes. You need to get the book Secrets of the Tomb. You need to get our four tape set on Skull and Bones and the Bohemian Grove. And the video, The Secrets of the Bohemian Grove. And understand what it really is, a satanic conspiracy out there. And of course, they're intent upon seizing the souls of men. So pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for Radio Liberty. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.